That would be me, and we've got Dr. Jeffrey Long from NDERF.org, and we're talking just about that, near-death experiences. If you've had one, by all means, go to NDERF.org and fill out the form, because over 1,000 there already and counting, and I've gotten some emails and great descriptions, and you really need to send them to Dr. Jeff. Now, I think if I had to name my favorite Art Bell call, it was years ago, a woman called about her NDE, and she had mentioned that she was blind from birth, and that she was in a car crash, and that she had an NDE. And I remember Art had said, "Were you driving?" And it was Art, "I'm blind." And Art started to laugh. And I remember I was listening late at night in bed, and I started to laugh. And, you know, that alone was funny. But the upshot of this was fascinating. And, you know, I was laughing so hard at, you know, Art, and I know just what it's like. You know, you're doing email, you're doing something else, you're kind of listening halfway, and, you know, you're just, yeah, well, were you driving? Yeah. And so what really was lost in that was probably more of a description of exactly what the heck this woman was dealing with, though I do remember that rather than being thrilled that she could see, because she'd been blind from birth, she actually was very disconcerted that she could see. It was images that she couldn't, with her earthly experience, really put together. So that raises a lot of questions about people who are impaired here in any way physically, what it's like during that NDE moment. And we will find out with Dr. Jeffrey Long on Coast to Coast AM. Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM with Dr. Jeffrey Long, NDERF.org. And I've been amazed how many emails and some fast blasts describing NDEs. And by all means, go to Dr. Jeffrey's site and fill out a form. Over 1,000 there already. So I got to ask you, I've been wondering ever since that wonderful call to Art, do you have any reports of people, for instance, who are blind that saw during an NDE?
Oh, absolutely, Raleigh. We have a series of people that are blind, including blind from birth people. You're actually referring to a show that occurred September 19th, 2004, and the guest was Vicky. Vicky, not only was she blind, but she was profoundly blind from birth. She'd had absolutely no visual stimuli her entire life and had actually no physiological way in which she could have any type of visual experience. And yet, as you described, when she had her auto accident and nearly died in the emergency room, she saw herself from the typical point of consciousness being above her body. And you're right, she was profoundly upset about this because it was so unfamiliar to her. She was actually terrified. Now, Vicky is not an isolated case. There's been several dozen people that are blind, many of which blind from birth, that have been reported to have near-death experiences that are mainly visual. So there's no doubt about that. And as all your listeners know, that is absolutely medically inexplicable. It's absolutely impossible for people to be having these type of visual experiences, and not just fragments of vision or, you know, maybe I think I see something. I mean, the visual aspect of these near-death experiences of these blind individuals is profound and every bit as detailed as people that are able to see and have a near-death experience.
Which is really fascinating start to finish, especially for people like Vicky. I didn't remember her name, but yes, that was the call, who are so disturbed by this because you really can't compute it. You know, those of us who can see don't realize what it's like if you've been in a world from birth where you can't see. Seeing is not the happy moment of your life.
Yeah, as part of it is, it's, you know, of course, after she calmed down, she was okay with seeing, but it's just so incredibly unfamiliar to her. In fact, she didn't really recognize herself laying on the emergency room cart. It was only after she correlated her, for the first time in her life, her visual sensation with, actually, she had felt her hair, and she could see this person had long hair. And interestingly, she was able to feel a ring that she was wearing, and she correlated that with what she was seeing. So absolutely astonishing to hear Vicky, yeah, on that very dramatic show that we had about her first visual impression. And again, you know, as far as the reality of near-death experiences, if that were the only case ever reported, that wouldn't be that convincing. But there are many, many others that have had, that have been blind, that have had near-death experiences. And in fact, our part of our research effort, we've identified the first person who was deaf, profoundly deaf from birth, who had a near-death experience where he was able to hear, if you will, hear. So there's no question that even in people that have these types of profound handicaps, these handicaps are not operant when they have their near-death experiences.
Now, we're talking about individuals, whether they are impaired or not, when they're in this experience, usually up on the ceiling. And I love the information that apparently there's a British hospital that's now going to start put things on high shelves to see whether NDEers actually see them. But we all know you'll kind of look down on yourself and you can see yourself. But how about seeing themselves out of their body? In other words, you know, they've left the operating room or what have you, or they're walking like the woman over to the nurse's station. Do any of these people perceive themselves in a body at that point?
Yeah, great question, Raleigh. We actually asked our near-death experiencers that on the web form. What was the appearance of your body in the out-of-body state? And it's variably described. People will often describe that it's translucent or transparent. Especially early on in the experience, they tend to have their own arms and legs. As their experience progresses, and especially for the more profound or transcendent NDEs, it's much more typical that they describe their appearance as being less humanoid, more like balls of light, energy. Often there's an interconnection of other beings or energy around them, so it can actually change throughout the experience. And certainly, when they're in, even in that initial out-of-body experience, they're actually unable to interact physically with their environment. Very commonly, we hear how near-death experiencers try to touch, often people resuscitating themselves or other physical objects that are in their environment, and their arm goes right through them, for example. So that's the type of characteristics that people describe of themselves in this initial out-of-body state during near-death experiences.
Yeah, I remember the story of the woman that you had walking down a hospital corridor, and she kind of freaked when she realized her shoulder was actually in the wall. And so, you know, that idea that you can go through, you know, objects we normally think you can't. Now, how about, so individuals can see themselves at some point. Now, when you and I get up in the morning, we kind of go to the closet and we decide, what are we going to wear? So when these individuals, clearly I don't think they see themselves, you know, in the hospital gown as they're walking down the hall or whatever, what are they wearing?
Well, that's a good question. I think very early in their experience, as best I can surmise from the NDEs, that seems to be sort of what they were wearing at that point in time. And again, as their experience progresses and becomes more transcendent, they're less likely to be wearing usual clothes as they become less humanoid and more energy or light-like, if you will, then they will be less likely to wear what we conventionally wear during our earthly existence.
Has anybody come back with any instructions for their life? I mean, obviously, love everybody and be good, but has anybody been told, quit your job, divorce your husband, and, you know, move to Iowa?
No. Very few people have specific directions, although a few people do. They seem to, very commonly, they come back and believe that they need to share what their experience was. Other NDEers, you know, will talk about the importance of loving other people and how that's the most important thing they need to do. Learning, education, they'll often come back and pursue education, which can lead to a job. But much less commonly, people come back with a specific direction, such as be a teacher. However, some people do come back with some belief or understanding or direction that they are to become parents and have children. That's not unusual. In fact, startlingly, sometimes these can occur. These understandings can occur in children, and when they receive specific information, mm-hmm. such as the number of children they're going to have or their gender, I have yet to encounter a near-death experience where that didn't come about exactly as they had been told.
Fascinating. So that's part of the predictions coming through. Now, we talked before about maybe a few people would see someone on the other side that perhaps they knew from another existence. But has anybody come back here and been able to identify someone in their life now that they knew previously or in another way than they knew before the NDE?
Boy, that's a tough one. If I understand your question, some people have what's called a shared near-death experience. That's one of the interesting things, where there will be two people that are interacting if they have like a life-threatening event, auto accident mm-hmm. is typical, or some other disaster. And there will be two people, or a combat's a typical scene where this can occur, but there will be two people interacting and they can actually see their own bodies and they talk about it. And we have several instances where they interacted. Both people were during the were sharing an experience, if you will, mm-hmm. and they saw their bodies damaged from combat or from an accident down below. And in the examples I have, one went on and didn't come back to Earth, and the other came back to Earth to tell the tale. So this is one of the really dramatic, fascinating experiences that we have, which again strongly suggests that this really is the pattern people go through when they really die and stay dead and don't come back to Earth.
Yeah, that's so fascinating.
Yes,
in the instance where the guy went on and decided to die, the guy who decided he's coming back or who did come back, decided or not, was he around for the other fella to make the decision not to come back or to be told he wasn't coming back? At what point were they separated?
Well, they had a fairly prolonged interaction. Both times that I example that come to mind, it was very, very obvious that one person was physically damaged much more than the other, and it was that person who was much more physically damaged. They were aware that their body simply would not support continued earthly existence, and so after some interaction, they basically departed. One returned to their body, and the other one did not.
Okay, now we get into something that's so arcane you're going to think that, you know, I'm completely Fruit Loops. But let's assume somebody's purpose in life, for whatever reason, is not over, but their body is over. Kind of like a drop-in soul is where I'm going. Is it possible that they go into somebody else's body who, during their NDE, they said, gee, gotta go?
Well, that's interesting, the concept of a so-called walk-in.
Yeah.
We don't have... we have vanishingly little evidence that suggests that happens a lot. However, the profound and overwhelming consistent message is that we are in a universe ruled by love. So I find it much easier to say that basically everything's possible as opposed to saying that something is not possible. So I wouldn't absolutely rule that out. It seems to be very, very important that we do have a purpose on Earth. A lot of that purpose is to learn lessons, and at least from reading the near-death experiences, I'm convinced that if we don't learn those lessons that we need to learn, that there are certainly going to be other ways and other times in which we do have that ability to learn those important lessons. And it may involve a walk-in, it may involve a different life at a different time, it may involve a different existence in a totally different planet, for all I know.
We talked about that people across all cultures had experienced NDEs, but in terms of, say, North America, is there any geographical distribution in terms of, you've gotten over 1,000 people, can you pinpoint, hey, there's a lot more coming from the Four Corners, for instance?
No, the near-death experiences seem to be very randomly distributed. We have experiences from every state in the country, so I can't really say that there's any predisposition to occur in one place as opposed to other. Certainly the one overwhelming correlation is people having them around 16, 17, 18 years old when they're young, reckless, and live life on the edge and dangerously and manage to find ways to get into accidents or problems that lead to them nearly dying. And of course, they're young and healthy enough that they tend to survive it. And then they have their whole life ahead of them in which they can share it. But that's about the only trend I've seen.
That's interesting for a couple of reasons. On the one hand, going back to what you said about the body being screwed up enough that you're not going to come back in it, debilitated enough. And at 16 to 18, that's less likely to happen. The other thing, of course, is 16 to 18, you're dealing with the rest of your life, quote unquote. In other words, theoretically, a longer future earthbound. So both of those reasons would make a lot of sense in the 16 to 18. One of the things I had wondered when I asked if there was any type of geographical spread is not so much the occurrences of them happening, but the reticence on the part of some people to speak of this. You know, culturally, certainly when this happened prior to Elizabeth Kubler-Ross or Raymond Moody or, you know, everybody else who's come since then, prior to that, I think a lot of people would be hesitant to verbalize this. In some of the reports you get, clearly they're willing to write to you, so that's, you know, maybe it's not a good control group to ask this, but are some people very hesitant to share the story?
Oh yeah, absolutely. We have a small number of people, and we ask in the website questionnaire form, have you shared this experience with anybody else? And we have a population of about 20 or 25 people that, for a variety of reasons, have not shared this with anybody. And so certainly, there are some people that feel comfortable sharing this with the NDERF website, whereas they wouldn't be comfortable sharing it with anybody else. We also have over several hundred near-death experiences that occurred prior to 1975. And that was when the groundbreaking book by Raymond Moody Life After Life was occurred, which coined the phrase near-death experience prior to 1975. People had no idea what these experiences were, and especially for people that are sharing them decades after they happened, with the experience occurring before 1975, there's a very common theme that they were very anxious about sharing this, or they thought people would think that they were nuts, or they didn't know what other people were going to think, or they'd, you know, go into the nut house or something. And certainly, before we knew how common near-death experiences were, that was a very real concern. Fortunately, we don't have anywhere near that amount of concern today.
What percentage of people who have written were, shall we say, agnostic or non-believer, or even if they were a believer in a religion, not believing that there was anything after this, and this experience changed their paradigm?
Oh, that's very common. It's fairly unusual that people's, we ask about their religious belief at the time of the experience and then their religious beliefs at the time that they shared the experience, which, by the way, the interval on the website is about 15 to 16 years on the average between the time they had their NDE and the time they actually share it with us, because we check on that too. But a relatively small percentage, you know, under, you know, maybe in the 5 to 10% range, were agnostic or atheist at the time of their NDE. And it is extremely difficult to have an experience like this and continue to be agnostic or atheist. In fact, I can only think of one NDE out of all of these who was an atheist at the time of the experience who remained an atheist. You know, obviously, over and over, and we've discussed tonight, and certainly for the NDEers that actually experienced this, I mean, this is a profound connection, a profound understanding by personal experience that there's something more out there, that there really is an afterlife, and that it's wonderful. And it's,
he remained an atheist, which is fascinating. I assume he accepted and believed his experience, or did he write it off as a dream?
Well, interestingly, and that was actually a she. She thought she didn't really. Well, she understood that it was a real experience, and she said that this certainly helped her with spiritual beliefs, but didn't really write it off as not being real. So I don't know how you could come up with that. I mean, the point is, though, 99.9% of the people do come back firmly believing that there is an afterlife, that it's wonderful, and carry that profound message of hope that affects all of us.
Now, in some ways, it's easier to go from the non-believer to that than individuals who believed in a very rigid religion that told them how it was, hell's fire and brimstone, for instance. What percentage of people were in the classical, it's the word in the Bible and no other way, had this experience and said, or not?
Yeah, that's interesting. We actually ask whether people's religious belief, both at the time they had their NDE and again 15 to 16 years later when they share their NDE, we ask them to classify their religious beliefs as either liberal or moderate or conservative slash fundamentalist. We actually have a pretty good mix. It's pretty close to 25%, 50%, 25%. So about a fourth of people that share do describe themselves as conservative fundamentalists. And when they share their experience, there's a very, very slight, you know, no more than a few percentage, but again, because we have so many NDEers, it actually is a significant, statistically significant shift in the direction of being a little bit more liberal. So in general, people that have that conservative fundamentalist background belief actually continue to hold that belief even after their NDE. However, if you look at it a little bit more deeply, they say, well, I'm more open-minded. They believe this experience happened. They believe it's real. It certainly changes them. They may have a little bit more spiritual beliefs as opposed to rigid beliefs, but they more often than not will stay within their church upbringing, if you will.
That's fascinating. I wish we could find out exactly what their pastors had to say about it, because clearly you couldn't go through one of these experiences without rejecting to some degree, you know, eternal life in hell. Or maybe you could. I don't know. We'll look at that. Dr. Jeffrey Long, NDERF.org. Yeah, maybe there is a way to reconcile this. But that then brings up, in fact, one of our Fast Blasters mentioned it. If you believe you are a sinner. All right, so we'll get to that as well, coming up right here with Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM. Proving everybody has to have a Tom Jones record they like. And I was laughing when I heard it because, you know, disc jockeys have two kind of records. One are the bathroom records, things like the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, because they're long enough to get to the bathroom and back. And anybody who's claimed they've heard more than the opening note and closing note of that is lying if they've been actually playing them. The other are timing records, records that you got to make it up to news and you can't figure out what's going to be a minute and 58 seconds. Now you know, it's not unusual on Parrot. All right, so it is unusual for the bulk of the population, but on the other hand, when you look at NDEs, and we are, near-death experiences on Coast to Coast AM with Dr. Jeffrey Long, and you can go to nderf.org or adcrf.org or oberf.org, and you'll be reading until tomorrow. Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die, right? It's an Ed Bruce record from way back when, and I think that sums up a lot of experience. Many of us want to know. We want positive proof that there's more. Of course, most of us don't want to go to the point of an NDE experience. Or do we? Of course, the movie Altered States in 1980 dove into that. Not that the guy was trying to die, but trying to create an experience, which, by the way, didn't work. But we'll find out from Dr. Jeffrey Long how many people, if any, have gone to the lengths of trying to create what would produce a near-death experience. Now, that's a little over the top, isn't it? I'm Raleigh James, and this is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Jeffrey Long is with us. We're talking NDEs. More of the population has had them than you might imagine, though many aren't talking. But, you know, I mentioned, Jeffrey, that some people are, no pun intended, dying to have this experience. Have you heard of anybody who is trying to induce the state where they might have one?
Fortunately, no. And when it comes to trying, you know, certainly near-death experiences are profound experiences. They're very transformative, and people that have them really, really get that there's life after death and that they don't have to fear death. However, when it comes to trying to create or induce a near-death experience, I have three words: no, no, and no.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly anybody that ever thinks about that will get no assistance from medical personnel. That would be unethical and illegal. And I think an answer to that can be found from the near-death experiencers themselves and what they learn during their experience. They learn that life is a gift, life is important and valuable, and to jeopardize that life in an effort to induce a near-death experience is absolutely wrong. And further, other near-death experiencers or researchers have looked into people that commit suicide or tried to commit suicide, which, if you will, is an effort to take your own life, you know, with or without the intent of having a near-death experience. And for people that have a near-death experience associated with their suicide, the overwhelming majority come back very, very clear that what they attempted was absolutely wrong. Very, very few ever try suicide again, and they really come back believing that whatever difficulties they were facing or whatever they wanted to escape, that's not the answer. Life is a gift. It's important. It's valuable. It's difficult. It's very, very difficult, but it's critical that we hang in there and continue to live our life as best we can.
One of the things that you had mentioned in terms of the literature that I got on you beforehand was when we were talking about having people call who had NDEs, which we will do next hour, hopefully. But you mentioned you would caution not using anybody who nearly died as a result of ingesting illegal substances, which, you know, psychotropic drugs and the like. I would assume that the experiences that come out of those are more psychophysiological than they are NDE.
Yeah, that's interesting. We've had a number of people share what are true drug experiences on NDERF on our website, and there's no question that they are different experiences from near-death experience. I've actually had enough of them that I could compare the experience elements of drug experiences and the experience elements of true near-death experiences, and they're different. They differ in a number of types of elements. The confounding variable, though, is that some people that ingest illegal substances nearly die. And if they nearly die, if their heart stops, if they stop breathing, then they can actually have a near-death experience and a very typical near-death experience. But it's just a little bit more difficult to figure out, sort that out, if they've ingested a large quantity of illegal substances, overdosed, if you will.
well, similar to ICU psychosis, where people who had been prolonged comatose and things of that, it seems that if there is a commonality to remember that, decent short-term memory is still a factor.
Oh, yeah, no question about that. I mean, you have to have some intact short-term memory in order to remember an experience like a near-death experience. Now, you raised the issue of ICU psychosis, intensive care unit psychosis. That's another type of experience that people have, unfortunately, fairly commonly with prolonged intensive care unit stays. They suffer sleep deprivation. They're very ill. They have all sorts of medications going on. And they often have experiences that are really not near-death experiences. They may distort the surrounding environment. The nurses or doctors may be perceived as being, you know, goblins or demons and
reptiles. Yeah.
And so it's really, and most of them are very frightening, as opposed to the overwhelming majority of NDEs that are not frightening. So those are types of experiences that with time you learn to sort out that occur when you're very, very sick, but they're not near-death experiences.
We talked about people who, during an NDE, will see or, be able to witness, shall we say, I guess that's seeing, other individuals in their life. Now, that raises a few questions I'll get to, but before I do, are there any individuals who are not undergoing the NDE but are close to someone who is? Any individuals who report, my God, I think that I saw, Sister Sarah here.
You mean like a deceased Sister Sarah?
Well, no, an NDE Sister Sarah. While Sister Sarah was in her NDE state, seeing, her sister Ima or something, was Ima, able to perceive Sarah?
Oh, that's a good question. Virtually always when people are having their near-death experience and they're in the out-of-body state, they cannot be perceived by other people, other earthly people. There are some rare exceptions to that. I just reviewed an NDE where someone was in the out-of-body state, and they interacted with their three-year-old daughter, who is known to be very, very psychic. I would emphasize that's extremely rare. In general, in the out-of-body state, you can't really, with rare exceptions, you can't really interact with people that are in their physical body on Earth.
Well, much like when you're dead, you can't do that normally, but occasionally a contact will be made. Now, has anybody ever come back to life after an NDE and come from thinking they were in a previous life? In other words, assuming there is reincarnation, somebody who maybe lived in the 1800s and now is having an NDE in 1962 pops back into that body and still thinks it's 1864.
There are some rare case reports where that's happened, and some of these are absolutely fascinating.
Tell me.
It can be even before 1800s, there's some rare reports where they actually go back even centuries before that. And again, that can be part of the life review process, where they actually become aware of their life prior to the earthly, current day life, or in fact, multiple lives have been described. What's really interesting is when they're reliving these distant past lives, they actually feel like they're the same person. Amazingly, they seem to feel they have the same personality, they're the same individual. There's that same sense of self, even over multiple different lives, which is fascinating.
Are they the same gender?
No. When they describe these, it seems to be fairly random in terms of whether they'll be male or female.
And when they have these, let's say they have three or four other lives, are they various races in various places of the world?
Yeah, absolutely. They don't necessarily, and that's what, sort of the validating issue. You'd think if you were to perceive a past life, if you were to try to construct that, if you will, voluntarily or involuntarily, it would be much easier to construct a life that's familiar. In other words, say being in America in the 1800s, being in America in the 1700s, but I'm not seeing that. The people that believe they live past lives and review them, they can be completely different cultures, completely different languages, interestingly. I mean, they're not their native language, male or female, completely different gender roles. And so that's part of what's very, very fascinating, to look at these types of accounts.
For that rare few that came back still thinking they were someone from a previous life, how did they get reacclimated?
That's interesting. Sometimes they actually can live, and again, we're getting into some rare case reports of near-death experiences, but some actually report having lived, and sometimes even very, very prolonged period of times in a different life or existence, if you will. I recall one vivid near-death experience where another, where an NDEer was living a different life and actually grew up and married and had a family, and then they came back to this earthly existence and they were completely apart from that. They had to go through a fairly prolonged grieving process because they'd lost all that was familiar to them, all that was comfortable to them, and it was very, very difficult for them to come back and make that adjustment back here on Earth after having spent such a substantial amount of time in a different existence.
So I'm stunned. I'm absolutely stunned, because originally I was thinking about somebody coming back into their, you know, bed in 1962 and thinking they were in 1864. But I think what you just told me is that there are some people who, during an NDE, instead of coming back to this lifetime, actually go back to another lifetime?
Well, it's a different lifetime. They can live a prior lifetime, or they can live a very different life. But yeah, there are some rare case reports where this happens, and it's, you know, it's not just a fragmentary sort of skipping around like a dream. I mean, they have a very logical, it's like living a life like you and me, Raleigh.
No, I know.
And they live this, they have their own emotional connections, they have their own life purpose, they have their own environment.
Yeah.
It's all very, very familiar to them, and yet, boom, they come back here, and it's a totally different ballgame.
Now, while you're saying this, years ago on Coast to Coast, I had Dr. Bruce Goldberg on. He's been on several times. And one of the things that Dr. Goldberg believes is, much like quantum pop physics, if you will, that you're living multiple existences simultaneously, and you can be reprogrammed to your quote-unquote better life, if you will. Now, some of these people, were they coming back into alternate lives at the same time period as the same person, but just in another situation?
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I haven't had anybody, and it's really hard to say, when people have remembrance of past lives, they're generally, as best I can tell, sequential. In other words, they're not occurring simultaneously, two or more different lives at the same period of earthly history. I'm not seeing that, although I can't say that's impossible. More often than not, it's, you know, one life, and then, you know, some period of time later in earthly history, they have a second life. You know, however, having said that, there's certainly some other case reports, such as the one I just described, where this person, you know, basically grew up, married, and had a family. I certainly cannot exclude the possibility that that is occurring as a parallel existence or universe, if you will, to what we're living in right now. And furthermore, consistent with that, when near-death experiencers come back, they often, a very typical theme is that, hey, there's a whole different dimension out there, and we're talking about a different spatial dimension, and perhaps even more than four dimensions. So a fairly typical concept coming back is that, you know, what we're existing in our current earthly world, our three-dimensional world now, may be the very tiniest tip of the dimensional way the universe is really set up. So certainly that is an absolute possibility, that there may be simultaneous existences going on. That's certainly possible from NDE evidence.
Oh, sure. And whether they're directly connected to us, the fact that we see such a limited spectrum of vibration, it only stands to reason that on other vibrational existences, they could be, you know, right here.
Absolutely.
But in terms of this individual who, you know, came back to a different life, got married, and then came back to this one, we know how she got to the different life because she had the NDE. What kind of cataclysmic thing got her back to this life?
Resuscitated, you know,
again.
You know, once they are resuscitated and come back to life and consciousness returns, I mean, again, understand these are essentially all people that are, or at least in earthly perceptions, are unconscious. But once consciousness returns, it's time for the NDEers to come back to Earth. It's relatively unusual, although not unheard of, for people, if you will, to bilocate. In other words, have conscious experiences going on several different places. But in general, once they're resuscitated and once they, if you will, come back to life, then they have to go on living their earthly existence here.
Okay, so what I was imagining it being is, here this person has this NDE and wakes up in another lifetime. I would assume in that lifetime that they've awakened, she would have to have another NDE or something to shift her back to this one.
You know, I don't recall the breaking point in the existence that they had during the NDE, so I'm not really sure how that happened. You know, the best of my recollection, it just suddenly terminated when she resumed her earthly existence without any NDE or life-threatening event in the other existence during the NDE.
So in other words, her NDE, which had to be clinically a matter of minutes in terms of in her dense earth body, she actually lived, say, 20 years?
Well, certainly a period of years. You know, I'm not really sure how many years, but absolutely. And that's again, rare but not unheard of. We certainly have a series of NDEs where people had existences that would be, I guess, in terms of earthly measurement, years. So again, part of the great fascination mystery of NDEs, here you have somebody who's clinically dead, who's unconscious, who by medical definition means unconscious, you cannot have a conscious thought, and here they are having this phenomenal series of conscious events, very, very vivid, very, very real as you and I talking, that can last for a period of years. Absolutely fascinating, and certainly opens up a huge number of questions about the nature of human consciousness and a variety of other issues. But yeah, that's one of the great fascinations of studying NDE. I mean, if I only saw one or two of these types of experiences, right, as a physician and scientist, I'd say, I don't know. But we're seeing a lot more than that. I mean, these do happen as part of the spectrum of what occurs during NDE.
It's beyond fascinating to talk about this. And of course, as everybody hears it, while none of us want to, you know, be in the position to have an NDE, we want to think, gee, if we come that close to death, we want one. But only 14%, which is sizable, don't get me wrong, actually have this experience. So with that in mind, are there any commonalities that predict who's going to have it?
That's a really good question. We don't really know. From any type of factor of an individual that has a life-threatening event, we cannot predict who is going to have an NDE and who is not going to have an NDE. The only possible correlation is that people that are closer to death, that are more seriously medically impaired, are probably more likely to have an NDE and more likely to have a detailed NDE. But outside of that, it makes absolutely no difference what their religious belief was or their lack of religious belief, where in the world they are, what their cultural background is, whether they're children, whether they're adults. In fact, NDEs have been reported centuries ago, as far back as the time of Plato, very typical NDEs. So none of that really seems to predict who's going to have an NDE or what the content of the NDE will be.
Now, we talk about 14% of people have them. Do you think there's another percent, maybe a very small percent, of individuals who have them and are never going to tell a soul?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and again, that's why the website that we have with the form for people to fill it out, you know, on the NDERF website is so important. This is a way for people to share NDEs that they're just simply not comfortable sharing with anybody else. So certainly that does happen. It's hard to really predict how many people have these experiences that don't share them. I think with the openness about NDE, an openness that, thank goodness, Coast to Coast AM is encouraging, I think more and more people than ever are comfortable sharing this and saying, hey, I had a near-death experience, and they don't fear anywhere near as much as they used to in years gone by being judged or ridiculed or considered crazy, which they're not any of. They're not crazy. They're not, you know, nuts. This is absolutely real, valid experiences. There's been several hundred articles in the medical literature written about this. We know they're real. It's just a matter of more people sharing them so that we can learn about them.
Is this broached in medical school at all?
Virtually never, which is really incredible. I mean, we learn more in medical school about some incredible, minute, absolutely obscure type of facts than we do about experiences that are very, very common, profoundly influential to people that have them. And did I say common? Well, actually, a Gallup survey in 1982 estimated that 12 to 15 million Americans had had a near-death experience, which was about 4% of the adult population. And of course, the people that have these are, in general, profoundly affected. These can really affect their belief system, very much affects them in general in a very positive way. So you would think, with something that's that influential and that significant, that we'd hear about it in medical school. And for virtually all medical schools, that's just unfortunately not the situation at this point in time. I hope that changes in the future.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, airline pilots, for the most part, many of whom have seen UFOs, know darn well that if they were to ever cop to that, to their employer, that they'd be put on psych leave. Yeah. And so it's sort of well known, don't do that. I was wondering, with doctors who managed to witness one of these, are they reticent to say, you know, I have a feeling this could have happened?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting, Raleigh, now that you bring that up. We have a fairly significant number of doctors and PhD scientists and a variety of other PhDs from all over the intellectual educational spectrum that have shared their experiences with the website. And certainly there is a very significant reluctance for people, especially the physicians and the scientists. They're a little bit more likely than others to say, hey, make absolutely sure that this is anonymous. Right. I don't want anybody to know. I don't want my colleagues to know.
I'm going to hold it right there, and we will continue to share that as well as share it with Coast to Coast listeners as well. I'm Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM.